Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
And with that said, welcome to the What Culture Gaming Podcast. I'm your host, Scott Tilford, joined by Pig Gill.
Hello.
Jules Pig and Rich Hudson.
I think you scared off most of the listeners.
Probably, yeah.
That voice. Hello.
I'd love it if someone can get in touch and let us know if they were traveling with a pig, if there was a pig nearby when they heard this.
Pig in your living room just went,
It's out again. We thought we'd do a questions pod because we're trying to plug the hashtag WCGP over on Twitter, where you can get in touch and leave us different thoughts and different questions and different opinions that you might have, and we'll get around to them. Now, they already did a questions pod last week, and we sort of do some of the questions at the end of the regular podcast as well. So some of these things, well, one of them popped up earlier, but because we weren't in on Wednesday, we didn't do a podcast then. We're a fresh batch of humans. I thought we'd tackle it differently, but that's not the first one. The first one comes in from Steve Perry, who says, "Hello from the US. You might need your imaginations for this one. An Ubisoft higher up recently said the power of the next gen consoles will enable the creation of new genres. What is a new genre that you'd love to see next gen?"
Right, well, this is the thing. This guy is clearly working for Ubisoft and is just trying to get us to farm out
ideas.
It's
an anagram for Assassin's Creed.
Well, no, it's just because he wants us to farm out ideas so that he can sit there and make a new genre. If I could make a new genre, do you think I'd be doing this for a living? Do you think I'd be sitting there talking? I'd be making video games.
If you get out there first and he runs with the idea, you can point to this podcast in audio form and say, "Well, look, that was me."
All I want to do is, I love Job Simulator. I think it's absolutely fantastic. Hilarious fun, really well made. So I'm just thinking, why don't they take this a step further and mix Overcooked with Job Simulator? So you've got a first person keep the kitchen from burning down simulator where you've got to throw all your food over to your mates who are also playing in VR, and they've got to catch it in real time and plate it up and put it out. That's what I'd like to do.
I'd
call it Last Food.
Expecting way better than that.
Well, the thing is, I've just created a genre, mate.
That's my genre voice. I've done it.
I've created a genre.
Genre boy. Rich, what would you have, sir?
If it's something that can utilize lots and lots of power that they're saying that the new consoles have, it'll have to be something like procedurally generated. Like, it's a new genre. Because you don't know what genre you're getting.
It's
just going to generate a whole new game with all the teraflops the Series X has. It's going to poop out a brand new game every time you press start.
You know what?
That'd
be great.
That actually would be good if you were just like, so imagine if it was like linked up to a game like Dreams. So you just typed in just saying like, "I feel like playing, I don't know, a horror shooter, and I want it to be Japanese schoolgirls." And then you just go bang, 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 and it generates
Fatal
it for
Frame
you.
Pops up.
And then it goes, Senpai shooter, done.
It has to generate the name as well.
Yeah, if they want something that can play around with power, that's what you'd get.
I would put the word action in and just see what it thinks up.
Action power.
Yeah.
I thought of the name of my game, by the way.
Go on.
Mates and Plates.
Much better. That's more Jules level.
Thank you.
I don't have one. I don't think I can beat procedurally generating procedurally. So I think I'm probably going to get a name for it. I'm just going to go with the return of the 3D brawler, because that hasn't been a thing since like, what?
I thought you'd just be like, Splinter Cell.
Yeah, something that they will never do, Splinter Cell. But also the 3D brawlers. I remember Urban Rain on the PS2, or just the idea of Streets of Rage in 3D, those kind of games. The Minority Report tie-in game had it, where you could pick dudes up and throw them through windows and just all this environmental interaction, and it was great. They've not done it since.
But that's why the Yakuza games are so good, because they offer similar
to that. I love Yakuza, but they don't... in Yakuza 6, they brought physics in, but you still can't grab a dude and throw him in a particular direction. You can only kick them, and then ragdoll kicks in. It's not the same. I want to pick a guy up and throw him through a window. Just once. One day, let me do it.
The fighting Thank system you. From Def Jam Vendetta, Fight for New York,
yes,
that's what it needs.
That with like some Havoc physics and then some sort of environmental interaction would be lush. Okay, so the next question is from Nicholas Coombs. This one was on the Wednesday podcast, but again, we're three new people, so why not?
Okay.
You're legally allowed to carry around one video game weapon in public. What is it?
Oh, God.
I'm trying to think of a weapon that would double as some sort of a means to get around, like some sort of teleportation device. Oh, the Bionic Commando arm. Because then I can just fire it at the walls
wait,
and swing.
Wait, you choose... Right. You would choose...
What?
Oh, okay. So basically you're just there like, oh, I want something that's actually practical. So you choose the least practical method. We live in Newcastle,
yeah,
where the average building height is like 2 stories.
Uh-huh.
You would not swing very far or very fast. There's a bloody river that's literally right next to our office.
I could jump out this window right now and I'd be away back home in like 10 minutes. You'd okay. be stuck there without your bionic arm.
Well, you know what?
Crying.
I'm just going to one-up you.
Go on.
I'll just take the portal gun, you fool.
Oh, I suppose you could, yeah.
Yeah, and I'll just...
No, no,
I'll,
that wouldn't
I'll
work.
See you at your house.
No, no, because
you,
you can't see my house to shoot the other portal. You can't get to my house from
I've already
here.
Shot it there.
you couldn't
your
see
Your wife
it.
Has got the other portal and I phone her up and I say, hey, Jake, go on, just check the
I don't
other
think
portal.
That's how the portal gun works.
And they go, bam, done.
Rich, you're the portal expert. Would that get Jules to my house?
I mean, I don't see any Emancipation Girls between your house and this office. So technically, his portal will stay.
It's literally the co-op version of the game. One of you has one portal and one of you has the other.
Oh, he's tweaking the rules now.
Have you painted the walls of your house with moon dust?
I've not.
Ah, you're a bit screwed there.
Ha!
Oh, yeah, because you need that, don't you?
You're going to have to bionic commando your way across.
And it literally killed a man. Cave Johnson. moon dust
Cave
poisoning.
Nonsense. I think that, I would put the bionic commando on because then I can swing with it. But what would you guys have? Because even if it's a weapon, you kind of want something that you can use.
The Groovatron from Ratchet and Clank.
Oh.
It just throwing up a disco ball into the air and watching everyone around forced to dance.
Well, forced to, yeah.
Yeah, it'd be brilliant because then I could just like...
I would kind of want an option to get out of that dance if I... Because I don't want to dance forever because knowing you, you just keep throwing the disco balls out and we'd have to dance all day. For the whole week.
Well, you don't. I do it while you're swinging, so you're dancing and
dancing
you're
in midair, plummeting to the ground. Rich, sir, what weapon / traversal mechanic would you
traversal
like?
Traversal mechanic. Something that maybe I could use as a traversal mechanic. Something I could use to maybe end somebody, but also something I could use to not end somebody. So I'm gonna pick the thunder gun from Call of Duty because I can, you know, big air blast. So I can use it to launch myself into the sky.
Show.
Latch onto Scott as he swings over and then I can just go off with
then
him.
Both dance
and again,
the
I could send somebody flying into the sea, or which would technically not kill them, or I could send somebody flying into the side of a building, which definitely would kill them.
Yes. I'm a big
fan. It's a big 3-in-1 there, and it's just a really cool thing.
Yeah, plus it's called the Thunder Gun.
And it's called the Thunder Gun.
Yeah. You can't get much better. Next one from Emmy. What indie games would you recommend to get someone into indie gaming? This is quite hard because I think you want something that has that sort of indie spirit and maybe sort of shines a light on different genres that only the indie space tends to focus on. These days, my shout would be Undertale because I think although Undertale's graphics are obviously quite extremely basic, the level of writing in that game is phenomenal. The amount of things that it takes on board as you go through is great. It's got such great replayability. I think it has so much personality and it's very indie. It's very quirky. Mm. And I'm going to go with Undertale off the top of my head.
I'm going to say, I think for the whole experience, the sort of the surprising depth, which is obviously something that very much indie games bring to the table, it's kind of their thing, would be Celeste.
Oh, Celeste's a beautiful
that
show.
That would be what I would suggest to people if they're wanting to play more indie games. And being like one of the, you know, ironically, the biggest indie game, aside from Undertale, obviously. But I think that's kind of opens up a whole genre of like, these are games that really take messages and emotion to heart. And there's obviously a lot of games out there like Gris, or Gris, whatever you want to pronounce it. Like
I think it is Gris, but
it is
near
Gris,
enough.
But, you know, it opens the door to stuff like that. And plus, Celeste is a banging game.
Yeah, Celeste's a great shout in terms of, like, the indie space will tackle, like, mental health issues or general sort of subject matters that the AAA industry very rarely goes anywhere near. So if you were going to get into indie games overall, that is something to sort of be aware of, that you can get much more out of. I'd recommend Red Strings Club alongside that, too, in terms of conversations on mental health.
I would say,
go on.
I'd say the Banner Saga.
I love the Banner Saga.
Is possibly one of the greatest video games I've played in a long time. Plus, it's a trilogy, so you get a lot out of that game as well. It's fantastic in its presentation, the commitment to they recreated most of the instruments that they used for the soundtrack, and they were based on like instruments that were like 10,000 years old or whatever. So like very, very like maybe thousands, not 10,000. Obviously, it was way before you. It's just fantastic mythology. I'd say other games like Pyre. Great game.
Oh, yeah. Supergiant.
Because it mixes... what I'd be looking for to show people what indie games are all about is taking stuff that isn't done by the AAA and just being like, this is something that's very unique that wouldn't necessarily get a platform in the AAA thing. And mixing a sports management simulator game with a... like a morality in-depth thing of Empire, I'd say that's quite a...
Plus the art style in Banner Saga is like kind of... It's like old... I can't think of the movie that looks like it, but it's got a very particular art style that looks like a... It's almost like that... What's that animal Robin Hood thing?
Robin Hood?
Is it just called Robin Hood? It's not called Animal Robin Hood.
No, no.
Him, Mr. Fox Hood, that style where it's like animals meets humans and everyone's anthropomorphic. It's that kind of style, but done a bit more maturely.
Hotline Miami?
Hotline's a shout, yeah. Especially in terms of the soundtrack. I think it's weird because if you're going to try and sort of... like, obviously, indie games have come so far since like 20... I always point to 2013 because that was when they became inducted into the Modern Museum of Art in New York. I think that's what the MoMA stands for. Mm-hmm. Museum of Modern Art. And that was the big sort of talking point around whether games were art and indie stuff and Limbo and all that kind of thing. So I kind of point to that and I'm like, well, what is it about this space of gaming that is like has a personality? But I think that they've gotten so big over the years that, you know, stuff like Dangerous Driving or Plague Tale are way bigger now. But yeah, they're all great shouts, I think, in terms of being indicative of why you would focus on indies.
If you wanted an easy starting point, then there's no better than some of the all-time greats of the genre, and that'd be something like Journey. I'd say that Journey is it's a 2 to 4 hour game. Mm-hmm. It's a perfect small investment, a maximum reward out of it as well. It's such a light-hearted and brilliantly crafted tale. I feel like you don't need a huge skill level to play through it.
No.
It's perfect to ease someone into trying something different. And there's nothing really to hate about it.
Where do you guys come down on Overcooked? Because that seems to be breaking through much at the minute.
I love Overcooked.
I hate Overcooked.
I think Overcooked is another like genre of indie games of like taking inspiration from like tougher games, even like Blasphemous.
Mm-hmm.
There's an entry level to Souls style thing. Yeah, Overcooked would be on there. Getting Over It with Bennett Foddy.
Mr. Big Foddy.
A challenge.
Yes.
Like, I think with indie games, I think you need to find a place to jump in. And then you realize that it's almost like a parallel universe to the AAA games industry, because you can literally get anything in the AAA, in the indie space, be it like emotional, moving things like Journey or something as ridiculously silly and infuriating like Bennett Foddy.
I kind of found that obviously we grew up across experiencing games across the late, like the 90s and the 2000s. And there was, especially in the 2000s, there was way more experimentation with bigger budgets. I feel like most of the bigger companies were still, they weren't focused on this formula will sell. And as much as like the 2010s saw loads of the bigger companies then double down on that stuff, for me, the indie space has been where all those ideas went. And if you want to experience the variety in gaming, it's in the indie space.
Yeah.
So next question comes from Dustin Cohn, who says, which video game company is taking the biggest risk in 2020 and do you think it'll pay off? He would say Ubisoft with Watch Dogs Legion. I'm assuming that means because of the new AI system and stuff in Watch Dogs Legion. Also says, love what you guys do and please keep it up. Thank you very much. Lovely, lovely.
I think I see what he means about it being a risk because on a technical level, the idea that like the promise that, you can recruit anyone.
Yeah.
And I think it's like, right, because obviously as soon as they announced that, the first thing people said is like, right, okay, so it's the same six people over and over again.
Yeah, the same six skeletons or something.
With varying names. But it's also, it could also be down to a risk in changing what they do. Because obviously Ubisoft formula is so prevalent now that we all know what it is, and we know that the last release they had with Ghost Recon Breakpoint, it completely screwed the game.
Yeah.
So it's like, are they going to try and dash away from this? How much will they separate themselves from this Ubisoft formula, or how much will they actually not change and genuinely completely ignore Breakpoint and just release the same thing again?
Mm-hmm. I'm kind of looking at Breakpoint as like, Legion as the change, like to justify. I mean, I like Watch Dogs 2, but I think they need like a definitive sequel.
I would have put that on Gods and Monsters because that looks like the biggest departure from what Ubisoft do. Because I mean, when they first announced it at E3, was it this year or last year?
Last, I think. Well, it would have been at least last or the year before.
I think Watch Dogs Legion is like, I think they're going to try, because they're trying to escape that, but I think there's going to be too much of the fundamental foundation of that game is based in the Ubisoft formula, and how much they can escape it will be tough, because if they just hide away all of the stores and stuff that would have definitely been planned for that game before they delayed it, would that leave the rest of it looking hollow? Because that would just be a really, really open, like out in the open visualization of how thin those games really are when you take away all the bulk added by loot boxes.
Yeah,
and stuff.
I'm so curious how it's going to sell in the UK as well, because it's literally set in a post-Brexit Britain, and it's just like, if most of us at this point are just going to be like, yeah, we can't bother with that.
Half the time, like, Britain's depiction and like in games, especially in something like Watch Dogs, is usually looked upon by Brits like, oh, okay, this is strange. In Pokemon, obviously, it's very different because it's not really Britain. In like Forza Horizon 4, you're just driving cars around the countryside. Mm-hmm. Like,
that made me laugh so much, the Forza Horizon 1. They're like, first off, we don't get that much sun for a start. like we can barely see the horizon because of the fog.
It's true, all the smog.
And it's like, if you think that you're going to be getting around our like country lanes in those cars without coming into a tractor every 5 minutes.
And not losing your wheels after 5 seconds of parking up.
Yeah, like...
Tractor dodging simulator.
I'm sorry, mate. The council's not been round to reshant the roads.
Oh, I was going
to
say the roads would be all knackered as well, because they never fill.
You're there and you're like a Lambo truck.
I would have taken a really like proper English depiction of a Forza game done properly.
Yeah, basically, I'll give you a little rundown of what it's like to be a very rich person in London. Everyone thinks it's like amazing.
This implies
like,
that you're incredibly rich.
No, but it's just like, I've seen enough of them to come up with this. Like, you see people just going like, oh yeah, I'm really flash, got the Rolex, got the suit on, got that. It's like, got my amazing car. It's like, oh, you do enjoy driving it. Well, yeah, I take it out the weekend. It's like, oh, what do you mean by that? It's like, well, I sit in traffic for about 5 hours. Yeah. It's like, just taking it around the block and spend about 50 quid in petrol just doing
that. Yeah, it's like, don't leave your nice car on the street, it'll get scratched.
Yeah.
But anyway, in terms of other companies that are taking the biggest risk, I think Sony at the minute, because they've fallen behind on the production of the PS5. They seem really reticent to actually put out any official details about it. They released the logo, they pulled out of E3, they've pulled out of GDC, they're not at PAX East or anything. They've kind of just gone like, well, we're Sony and we have the PS5 and it's coming at some point, but I think at the minute Microsoft are gaining more momentum. The only thing that seems to be in the way for Microsoft is that they have said they're not doing any exclusives for 3 to 4 years, which for me makes it not remotely interesting. Other than like, oh, it's cool, it'll be in everything box. But I like the war of the exclusives that comes with new consoles, and I think that Sony, considering the IPs that they have, I'm not gonna say they're dropping the ball, but like, there's just, I think it's a big risk to pull out of E3 on the year that you're releasing a system.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. I think that they it could be you could blanket this as well by saying that other companies that are taking the risk at the moment, anyone who is being reticent to change, like, the industry is changing right in front of us. And with the release of these new consoles, we are, as gamers and as consumers, asking for different things from our games. We have taken to the games as service thing, I'd say. It's been a bumpy ride.
Yeah, very selective.
But it's like, I think that anyone who's sticking to a year-by-year release is going to start really flagging. We've seen the sort of crumbling and collapse of the WWE games. We've seen them in the NBA games as well. So only time will tell if sticking to a formula like that is going to keep just giving them negative returns.
2K is a good show.
It's a very good jump-off point for that Call of Duty this year. Yeah. It's in a very, very, very bad position. I do actually have some content soon regarding that, but yeah, the way that the next game has been handled, with Sledgehammer being taken off it and Treyarch being lumped onto it and having to take whatever they've done and either just complete Sledgehammer's work or bring their work over with a year less to make it, it's not looking good.
It's worrying as well, because it's like, have they not looked at what happened with Yuke's and the 2K WWE 2K debacle, and just seen like what happens when you take over somebody's project halfway through and you're not given time or resources to do it? I know that Activision are probably pouring money hand over fist into it, but it's time. Time is what
it's
needed.
It's time, but it's also the fact that they have
different philosophies.
All of their games basically have failed over the last couple of years simply because their expectations, their predictions, their wants from it are so ludicrously high.
Well, they have,
so that they always come out as a loss, even if they've made X number of million, even billion dollars, but because they wanted 2 billion, 1.5 simply isn't enough. We're going to go sack some people.
Yeah, they've got really weird... they've got very differing design philosophies as well. You'll notice that those games that on and off feel very different. Everyone was like, oh, Call of Duty is exactly the same. It's the same.
It's
sort of
really
arcade.
Not.
It really, like, great.
Like, honestly, I'm back on Modern Warfare at the minute and I'm loving it.
Yeah.
And it sucks that Sledgehammer got taken away, because as I'll always say, World War II is massively underrated. Mm. When I've gone back to that, it feels the most like Modern Warfare than any other current generation Call of Duty.
In terms of the release schedule, like, it is that clash of ideals where they have a established platform for content on with Modern Warfare from last year, but they're also also look into the next installment on a yearly basis, and you can't do both unless you want to try and fracture the fandom. Like, some people are going to stick with Modern Warfare, and then assumedly this year's one is Black Ops, isn't it, I think?
We genuinely don't even know yet, but right. it could be whatever Sledgehammer left, mm-hmm. or it could be whatever Treyarch were meant to be doing for next year being mm-hmm. brought back.
I totally understand why they release these games every year, because they need to reset the system, because people hit out max and they get bored of it quickly. But you look at a game like GTA 5 online, mm-hmm. that is getting content that's put into it, but it's still on the same bones of something else. But the bones are healthy. They mm-hmm. work. They're not being fractured and split every single year. If Activision and other developers took the time to be like, right, let's just build one solid foundation, and then every year we can come up with a way to reset it. We can call it mm-hmm. seasons. We can change it in terms of like the yearly progression ladders, whatever, mm-hmm. but just keep it the same and plug new stuff into it, because the formula is right.
Well, that seems to be what they're trying to do with Modern Warfare, and they've said, oh, we're going to do a Battle Royale mode for it, and they just did like one of the
big
updates
for it. But they've already done it. So why don't they stick with what they've already done and mm-hmm. basically just gone, right, okay, we're going to move this.
Well, I think that's weird. If it's anything that's remotely like modern, a current timeline or something in the future, that is close to what Modern Warfare is. So it's like the only thing you can do, quote unquote, this year is something that is maybe back in the past again.
Yeah. I mean, that's what's rumored. It's rumored to be like Vietnam, like properly, because we've only ever touched on that in like Black Ops 1. Mm. So that's rumored to be what's happening. But mm-hmm. again, even now, it's March on Sunday, we genuinely have no idea what it is yet. And usually by now, we've got at least leaks or whispers. We've genuinely had nothing.
No, it's. I think I assume they're waiting for E3 or something.
As
big.
Much as the current industry trend of delaying everything is a thing, and as much as I would love for Modern Warfare to get another year in out in the open, it is very good.
Yeah, it's great.
Activision simply won't want that because they want that extra amount of money, because mm-hmm. they're not going to make anywhere near as much releasing another season to the Battle Pass as they are to releasing a whole new game.
That's the thing
of how finished it is or isn't.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the unit sales will always be more than any other DLC thing. Although the microtransactions they brought in for Modern Warfare seem to be keeping that thing afloat, because like I said,
they're not actually that egregious. Honestly, when I'm going back to it, it's really. Yeah. Bad.
You don't notice them necessarily unless you go looking for them.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary. Not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable, too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Before we go any further, I want to talk to you about today's sponsor, Masterclass. With the amount of time we spend discussing and analyzing video games on this channel, it's always good to understand exactly how these experiences are put together. And fortunately for me, I can do just that with Masterclass. With Masterclass's streaming service, you can learn from the best to become your best, studying and growing with over 200 plus of the world's leading instructors. For me, I've been having a blast using a class on video game design by The Sims creator Will Wright to find out exactly how game mechanics are designed around player psychology, as well as learning how important playtesting is to shipping the titles that you and I both love. But it hasn't stopped there, as I've also been brushing up on my practical filmmaking skills directly from my favourite movie director, Martin Scorsese, as well as trying to get back in the cooking game with Roy Choi's amazing course on intuitive cooking. Seriously, my kitchen is a mess, but my belly has never been more grateful. For just $10 a month, an annual membership with Masterclass gets you unlimited access to courses on your phone, computer, smart TV, or even via audio-only modes. Even better, every new membership comes with a 30-day money-back guarantee, and 88% of members feel that the service has made a positive impact on their lives. And to put the cherry on top of that cake, right now, What Culture Gaming listeners get an additional 15% off any annual membership at masterclass.com/gaming. That's 15% off at masterclass.com/gaming. What's that? You want it one more time? Well, that's the URL, masterclass.com/gaming. Right, now I'm going to watch Tony Hawk try to teach me how to ollie properly. I'll see you all soon.
No. Next thing from Chris Malforth, who says, really makes driving to and from work like a road trip with mates from the WCGP podcast. Yay. So yay. Would like to know, what games would you like remastered that no one talks about? His would be Colony Wars or Overboard from the original PlayStation.
Right. Overboard? No, I was literally just, about to say it.
Yeah.
Because I've been
Overboard?
Well, because I've been banging on about it recently. So what I was doing was I went through my old PS1 library and I was like, this game is absolutely effing jeffing, this
good.
Is.
Yep.
And what it is you play as a boat, a galleon, and you basically, it's a puzzle solving game where you control a boat from a top down perspective, and it's literally the most arcadey silliness that you can get. And you can either choose to fire your cannonballs out of your left side or your right side,
okay.
Or you can change weapon and fire them out the front. You've cool. just got to solve puzzles and avoid giant traps like saws and whirlpools and stuff like that. It's Crash Bandicoot if you were a boat.
Bandicoot's better. I think, something like that would be good on Switch, I guess, if it's like a nice little mini-gamey type thing, or like an arcade.
No,
kind of
how
thing.
Dare you?
What do you mean?
How dare you?
That's what's getting, the highest accolade I could have given it?
That's the full remaster, and it's coming out on PS5 with all the terrible...
What, a full $60, £60 thing?
It's totally not what I would choose, but I'm just saying Overboard is...
That sounds cool. I never played that. My shout from something on the PS1 would be Three Simple Words... Sheepdog and Wolf.
Because I was thinking
of that the other night. I don't know what reminded me of Sheepdog and Wolf. I think it was just Ralph Wolf. I was watching a little clip of him.
We were talking about PS1 underrated gems at
maybe.
Some point last week.
Every now and then Sheepdog and Wolf just sort of comes up in the office. I was thinking about that the other night and I was like, why did that never come back? Why did that never get a remaster or re-release or anything else? And I don't need it to be reskinned or anything.
Yeah.
Although you could do like a cel-shaded version of it, but I would just take that game, just put the PS1 version on PS4, same way they did with Final Fantasy VII or whatever, and just let me play that game. Now, I did look up the review scores the other night, and it's only on like 5 out of 10 from GameSpot. So maybe my childhood's lying to me, but I thought it was good.
Official PlayStation Magazine gave it 9 out of 10.
Good.
I swear down, mate. It's worth every single second. That
good. I remember thinking it was brilliant. I thought it was really hard when I was a kid because if you play as Ralph Wolf, mm-hmm. and you go up against Sam the Sheepdog, and you've got to steal the sheep in a puzzle-based scenario from different levels.
Basically, he likes it because it's Metal Gear Solid, but
it is kind of like Metal Gear Solid.
It is. Exactly.
You get a big red rocket put on your back and you sort of swoop in, you pick up a sheep and then you fly back to the checkpoint again. It's amazing. Rich, what would your underrated PS1 thing be?
Oh, do you know what? Most of the stuff I played on PS1 were all licensed games.
Mm.
When I think back to it, were all like movie tie-ins, TV tie-ins, like, you know, the Potter games on PS1 are the best ones.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry. The Monsters, Inc. Scare Island as well, I absolutely adored.
Oh, yeah.
I really, 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 really like that game. playing like, you know, Gran Turismo and stuff like that as well. But I think I mentioned this before on pods, but The Italian Job on the PS1.
Yeah, you'd want that. Yeah.
It was a really, really good game. And I go back to it and it's really, really hard. But I really, really, really love that game. But I love the idea of taking a film or a TV series and making a game out of it, like way after its prime, because obviously that game was made to be reminiscent of the 1960s film, the Michael Caine one, not the reboot one. And then they did things like the Scarface game on PS2.
Yeah,
loved it.
And even recently they did a Fort Boyard game.
Did they?
I didn't know this.
Yeah, it was literally only like last year.
I guess the Warriors was like 30 years.
Yeah,
like.
The Warriors as well. That was what I was thinking of. Like taking an older film or TV franchise and making a new game out of it. That's kind of what they did back with the Italian Job on the PS1. And it's like, I don't know why they didn't do that more, because those IPs are up and about. They're floating out in the air. Like even taking something like the Incredibles game, Rise of the Underminer on the GameCube, which was intended as the sequel to Incredibles.
It was, wasn't it?
Incredibles 2. So the fact that they opened the Incredibles 2 with the Underminer, I was kind of sad, because it's like, that's negated that entire game.
Yeah.
But I mean, Italian Job for me would be something I'd love to see redone. Mm-hmm. But even just the general idea of taking an old IP that may just be up in the air with a film studio and just making a new game out of it. Oh, like the Thing game, for example.
Yeah, Thing game.
Something along those kind of lines. Do more stuff like that, because, you know, licensed games to direct films just don't happen anymore.
No, if you did it way after, it frees up the production time and everything. Like
Goals. It's like you don't have the pressure to try and release it on a film release. You can just make the game.
Mm-hmm. What's the engine that the Resident Evil 2 remake is running on?
RE engine.
Yeah, I mean, so we're already seeing that RE2 and RE3 are on the same engine with little tweaks. As is 7, as you just said. I think that they should go back, and my PS1 choice would be Dino Crisis, because I just think that having the ability to have, instead of zombies, like T-Rexes and infected velociraptors, I mean, come on.
I thought that was an open goal after Jurassic World, like, became the highest selling thing thing of the in the world at that time or whatever. It's like, just cash in on dinosaurs. You've got an IP waiting.
I wouldn't be surprised, because Capcom love a bit of the money. Who doesn't love a bit of the money? No. And Square Enix, they love a bit of the money. They love a bit of the money. They're doing remakes at the moment. They're both doing remakes of the thing. What happens when eventually one of the representatives from either company meets in a lift and they just go, hey, remember when we did Parasite Eve? And they're going to go, oh yeah, let's make Parasite Eve again.
And they hug, and there's a rainbow.
And, and then everyone's just like, oh, we're going to make so much money.
Sheep Dragon Wolf, you do it.
Should we do that as well? Yeah, we'll throw it in there.
Just why not? If you're going to bring that in.
So do you have the license for that? Not at all, mate. I'll throw it out. Don't worry.
We'll make it work. We can do quite a quick one, because I don't think I've played. Did you play much Final Fantasy 15, you chaps?
Final Fantasy 15 is the
last one.
Oh, yeah. So I was thinking of the online one. That's Final Fantasy 14. Yes, I have it. I've got the Royal Edition.
Oh, nice. Okay, we'll do a little quick one. I don't think you haven't played Final Fantasy 15.
Nope.
We'll tell you why it's naff. But the so this question,
not naff.
It is pretty naff.
No, it's not naff.
It's pretty bad.
It's just the combat doesn't ever feel as weighty as I wanted it to.
Yep.
But I've had it. You've got more control over it than probably any other Final Fantasy.
Other than the remake, the upcoming one,
is so good,
which I can't talk about. But still, for 15, I didn't like that you had to hold the button to the combat. I thought it looked gorgeous. Anyway, question comes from Sanic, great name, who just says, "You guys talk about Final Fantasy all the time. Just wondering what your thoughts on Final Fantasy 15 are. He adores it. It's my first Final Fantasy, but not last. Thanks. Right. All the best, Red Heart."
You have answered your own question.
I think I copied and pasted that. It's changed it to Red Heart.
No, but he's anyway. You mean like a love heart sort of
thing? Yeah, it might have been.
Well, the thing is that I genuinely think that because you have said that it's your first Final Fantasy game, you're going to be enamored with it because it actually is a perfect entry title.
Maybe.
It's a decent action game.
Yeah.
It has got a fairly confusing plot, but it's not like overtly convoluted like some of the other ones.
They've patched a lot of stuff now as well.
They've got like, it's beautiful. Mm-hmm. The camaraderie that you have with your friends is genuine.
Can you name them? I can name Noctis.
Noctis
Ignis. Prompto.
But you end up spending so much time with them that you end up just going like, oh, their personalities are really quite charming.
Yeah.
That doesn't actually happen that much in other Final Fantasy games. I know that other people will say, oh, I've got my favorites and blah, blah, they're party favorites, but they don't have as much they don't really feel as fleshed out because of the lack of voice acting.
I would disagree in 0.27 and 0.9, but the campfire scenes, not 8 for the camaraderie. I think that if you're going to have a platoon of people, I think 7 and 9's parties are their parties.
Yeah, yeah, sure.
But in 15, the campfire stuff, because you can choose to just say, sit down, make a campfire, wherever you want. Oh, sorry, no, it's specific points, and cook some food, and there's like all this little banter where everyone cooks food and shares it together, and it's like a cool way to bank your XP and stuff. Those things are cool. But yeah, in terms of like recommending others, for me, I'd recommend 7 or 9. They're so godly.
I know that 7 and 9 get like loads of love. 9 less so, and I think that 9 definitely deserves
nine is right
a lot
next
of time.
To it. Yeah. Right, 9's just as good.
But 8 is really good.
Mm-hmm.
8 just is one of those ones where it feels like such a fever dream once Squall gets hit by the ice in the heart, because you're just kind of like, what is happening? Like, you're a regular school teenager, and now the school is flying, and she's an ice time witch, and I think all of time is falling apart, and you're going back and meeting Irvine, and like, it
goes crazy. But it has one of the best concepts at the start, that it's just like a universe. It's totally Harry Potter style, where like you're
it literally
is.
Get me in.
It's this one, Rich, and you play. You know, you're a student. You're part of this group called Seed, and you're learning how to be a soldier, ostensibly. But you're part of this university of soldiers, and you get dispatched out to do different missions and stuff. But you're all hanging out on campus, and at the beginning, and you sort of get to like foster all these different relationships through the campus first.
There's one thing that they didn't really address that's actually hilarious. Your grades on your mental stuff and your physical stuff is all graded on like a system, and depending on what grade you get, that's how much you can charge or what missions you can take on. So if you're really crap, you might just be stuck like going like, oh, there's some little bugs in the forest, go and attack them. You're like bug protector,
I'm grade F. Next question comes from Ben in brackets Kratos Sagara. I'm gonna go with Kratos Sagara.
Hey.
Also, I'm gonna ask you guys, what would you guys have in your brackets as your name? What would you pick? I'll be Scott Shovel Knight.
Isn't this more sort of like your Metal Gear Solid
name?
That's
just his username.
I'm just thinking, what would we have in brackets to accentuate our actual names? I'm going to go with Shovel Knight. You can pick whatever you want.
Because he loves Shovel Knight.
Are we just putting a video game character there?
This isn't an actual question. I just thought we'd add something in brackets to make ourselves look cooler.
Time crisis. Never gonna That's going to be mine. just time crisis.
Good, I'll take that. His actual question was, give us a soundtrack in a game that made you feel something or defined a moment for you, for better or for worse. I can't think of anything for worse, but for really positive stuff, I always point to the very start of Halo 2. When you're taking on the Scarab tank, and it's the first time you hear the Molnir mix.
Rich, what is your musical thing?
Oh, God.
Was it the MIDI Harry Potter music?
Do you know what? Genuinely, go back and listen to the soundtracks of the PS1 Harry Potter games. They're really good. They got a whole orchestra, and it's fantastic.
I remember I came in, and I watched you doing a live stream, and you were playing through the spider forest bit. And I was like, this music's genuinely it's creepy. Mm.
I think for me, again, I don't really have anything about bad about music.
No.
Or a point that made me feel really sad with specifically the music. Mm-hmm. But for me, the first time that I really recognized video game music was Broken Down Records, Split Second.
Nice.
With how that music is played into the actions of the game, similar to how SSX did it as well.
Yeah.
Like, that was the first time I realized that they put so much effort into something that you know, in other games, it's just like, yeah, there's music in the background. That's all we need. And then when they played up on that and they made this incredible soundtrack, which I've been listening to recently, going back to it, it's like, God, this game's so good.
I think anything that dynamically mixes audio into is just phenomenal.
But then in terms of just pure quality and craftsmanship, I have to go to Cuphead.
Nice.
Yeah, that's
a great show.
Incredible music.
I would, I think for mine, I'm going to throw in Hotline Miami because that kickstarted my love of synthwave. But that game, you play it in time with the music, literally, but it's the I don't know, the furious nature of that score completely factors into the way that you play that game, and it only makes you play faster and take it in
so
better.
When I was a young lad, so you got to imagine full emo fringe at school, had just discovered what LimeWire and BearShare were. Great. Peer-to-peer downloading systems, and I didn't know what piracy was at the time. And my friend Joe was just like, "Oh, have you seen? Have you got the new demo disc for the PS2?" And I was like, "No." He's like, "Hey, I'll lend it to you. Go home," and it had a demo for Final Fantasy X on.
Great.
And it had that intro music. It was like, "Doo doo,
doo doo." The thing that everyone thought was Rammstein, but it's not.
Yeah. Well, they were every right to think it was because the lyrics were.
It's the best. looking at the lyrics to that, where it's like "take you" or whatever.
All I remember was like "and by the hand that feeds you." That was the only line that I could make out, and I remember just being like, "Yeah, this is awesome! I love this! I'm gonna download this track." So even though I'd listened to many soundtracks before, and Sonic the Hedgehog's theme, Mario's theme, will always be embedded in my brain. Mm-hmm. I remember that one time clearer than ever because of the fact that it was just like I was so hyped for this.
I was the same.
Crap metal track.
Oh God, it was like there was a back in my high school, everyone said that there was an English band that covers Rammstein in English, and that's what that was. And I have never actually gone back to figure that out.
That is definitely
not the case.
That's so like Mew is under the truck. Oh, band.
Well, he wasn't, but Missing No was.
Don't.
One of them was totally under the truck.
One was under the truck.
There were, but I think in regards to the Final Fantasy thing, there was the very beginning of that, because it went alongside the CG cutscene, looked phenomenal and everything. Yeah. Final Fantasy has a way of just nailing those kind of moments.
Every intro from Final Fantasy across the board will always be good. That Final Fantasy VIII one where Squall and Cypher fighting.
Or he cuts his face.
And he cuts his face and the feathers come up. And
yes.
It's like, whoa, in my brain.
It's getting serious. We can end on Mr. Edward Shiraz Hans, who says, are turn-based RPGs dead, or did Dragon Quest XI, Octopath Traveler, etc. prove that there is still a market for them in the gaming world? Cheers, guys. Enjoy the podcast. Jules, you are a legend.
Oh, thanks, bud.
Yeah. I'm going to say no, because Yakuza 7 is pivoting their entire design to become a turn-based RPG.
One letter, a dash, and one word. XCOM. turn-based strategy.
Would you call that a turn-based RPG?
It's you level up in it.
Yeah,
you do.
It's
you upgrade.
A strategy game.
Isn't any RPG a strategy game?
But XCOM's not an RPG though.
Well, what's
is
okay,
it?
Okay, well, if it has character development, you could spin it as an RPG. Primarily an RPG, but
you're literally creating a character and then giving them perks and strengths.
It's true.
You can customize how they look. It literally is turn-based.
Yeah, I'm not saying it's not turn-based. I just, when I think of the examples he gave, Dragon Quest XI, Octopath Traveler.
Okay, well then let's take Octopath then.
Yes.
So break it down for me. What makes Octopath different from XCOM?
Well, the perspective, for one, the story.
Well, perspective is nothing. You can't just say, like, in terms of, like, perspective is how you look at the game.
No, but if you classify JRPGs, it tends to be a side-on, turn-based thing. This is a completely different angle for everything.
Well, all we've done is pivot the camera up.
But I think, I don't know, for, like, the examples that he gave, I think, are very story-driven
things. I know,
things,
yeah,
where you
I'm just,
all the way through.
I'm just being an ass.
Whereas XCOM, it's not necessarily. But in terms of people being attracted to turn-based gameplay, that's still totally, like, Civilization's humongous.
Yeah, I mean...
Two-point hospital's phenomenal.
Specifically turn-based.
Yeah.
I feel like there will always be a place for it. I mean, there was a time where they said that the JRPG format was dead because of the fact that it didn't seem to sell well. But I have no idea what they were basing it on, apart from maybe...
Western numbers rather than Eastern numbers, probably.
I will have to say that maybe there might have been a bit of a bias in the fact that there was an oversaturation of the market at one point. I remember there was a time where we got, from Square alone, they released, like, Lost Odyssey, which we were talking about earlier. They released that... Last Remnant game, they released another one. There was Magna Carta.
Oh, there's Tolan's Quest 2000.
They put out so many, and it wasn't just them, it was loads of them, that there probably was a bit of a sort of like, well, it's actually a bit boring now.
I think there's an assumption that live action is better. Like, Rich, are you much of a Tim? Do you love?
No, really.
Because does it tend to be, because I know that like Ewan and Josh bounce off that stuff too. Like, does it tend to be you want something that's more full on? Because there's an assumption
there's
that's better.
I think there's a part of me that would kind of like... The closest I get to turn-based is Pokemon, which is obviously probably the loosest term.
That's totally turn-based RPG.
Turn-based,
yeah.
But like, you know, that's if I said, oh yeah, Pokemon alongside Final Fantasy. Like,
I think that pretty much hangs.
Yeah, I think it's just sometimes when I play turn-based stuff, I just look at it and think, I wish I could just be like actually using my own like reflexes and stuff to have combat. Like, it's kind of like using VATS in Fallout.
Yes.
I never use VATS because it's like, oh, I could roll a dice and see if I can hit a headshot, or I could... hit a headshot myself. I think that's kind of why I bounce off turn-based.
Right,
stuff.
Right.
I think that maybe just based on that, you might like the Paper Mario series because they actually have an ability where you can actually interact with the attacks you're doing. So you like press a button at the same time and you bounce, or you can
the
evade
only one of those
stuff at the right
Super
time.
Paper Mario on the Wii, which is really not RPG.
No,
the old ones.
No, I think it's a Thousand Year Door. I think so.
One, yeah. And then Paper Mario's the N64.
Valkyria Chronicles, which I hadn't played for so long, and Jules recommended it so much.
Oh, I love
that's a great. Top-down, turn-based strategy game where when you need to take a shot, it's like a military-based anime thing. When you need to take a shot, you zoom in, you aim the rifle, aim the tank yourself, and then zoom back out and move everybody.
That's kind of the thing I'd be keen on. Not like I would completely brush off doing turn-based stuff. If like, for example, like Yakuza went, hey, we're going to do a turn-based game. If a game series I like said, hey, we're going to do a turn-based thing, I'd be
Call of Duty turn-based.
No. Like, I wouldn't say no, but I'm not the kind of person to go out of my way to play turn-based games.
I have a weird thing for it. I think it's because it's nostalgic for me. It reminds me of my childhood. It reminds me of Final Fantasy VII and those old school JRPGs that were all on the PS1. That if anything has a turn-based mode in it, I'm just all over it.
I think I'm in the same mindset. I think it might be down to sort of personal preferences. I just like being in full control and knowing that I can take my time to come up with a response to an enemy's thing. Because like sometimes in the heat of battle and say like Devil May Cry or action games, I'll be overwhelmed and I don't know what to do.
Yeah.
Whereas if I was like, oh, wait a minute, if I was just able to pause time and look over there, there's an escape route or there's the thing
There's something cool about, freezing time, planning a bunch of stuff out and then letting it all go forward. I think the John Wick Hex game does that, and it's like that game got no coverage, but that game is great in terms of I'm going to punch this guy, steal his weapon, roll over here, do this, whatever, and then, you know, resume time and do that stuff. But yeah, I think overall, I think it's too old school to go away. It's like, it has too much of a following.
It's embedded.
Yeah, I think it's...
It's got a resurgence, and I think because the industry is so big, the audience base across the board is so big, there's a chance they can easily tap into that many people. And if they go in with realistic expectations as to how well things will sell, then they'll be happy.
Yeah, totally. So yes, this has been the World Culture Gaming Podcast. If you want to send in your own questions, thoughts, bits and bobs, use the hashtag WCGP and we'll get around to as many as we can in the future. But yes, for now, I've been Scott from... That's not the thing at all. I've been Scott from whatculture.com. I don't care anymore. This is the end of not a video. It's not, you're not right. I mean, I'm not right.
Oh my God.
My mind is broken. Let me know.
Let's go home.
Down in the comments. This has been the World Culture Gaming Podcast. I've been your host, Scott Tilford, joined by Jules Gill.
Thank you for having me.
And Richard Thompson.
Thank you for listening. Have a great weekend.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye. Someday I'll not mess up the ending.
Never.
But it is not this day.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter.
Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.